was into the doorway. But his parents, Marilyn bent over the sink, James hunched in his chair, don't look up. On the far side of the table, Hannah squirms over her toast and milk. I'm sorry, she thinks as hard as she can. I forgot the chain. I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Her parents don't notice. In fact, they act as if she isn't even there. Silence for a long moment. Then James says, You really think a chain on the door would have changed anything? Marilyn clunks her teacup hard against the counter. She would never have gone out on her own. I know she wouldn't. Sneaking out in the middle of the night? My Lydia? Never. She rings the china with both hands. Someone took her out there. Some nutcase. James sighs, a deep, trembling sigh, as if he's struggling to lift a very heavy weight. For the past 3 weeks, Marilyn has been saying things like this. The morning after the funeral, he woke up just after sunrise, and everything came rushing back to him. The glossy casket, Louisa's skin slick against his, the soft little moan she had made as he climbed atop her. And he suddenly felt grimy, as if he were caked with mud. He turned the shower on hot, so hot he couldn't stand still beneath it and had to keep turning, like something on a spit, offering the steaming spray a new patch of flash again and again. It hadn't helped. And when he came out of the bathroom, a faint scratching noise led him to the bottom of the stairs, where Marilyn was installing the chain on the front door. He had wanted to say what had been growing in his mind for days. What had happened to Lydia was nothing they could lock out or scare away. And the look on Marilyn's face stopped him. Sad and frightened, but angry too, as if he were to blame for something. For a moment she seemed like a different woman, a stranger. He had swallowed hard and touched his collar, buttoning it over his throat. Well, he said, I'm going into school, my summer class. When he leaned in to kiss her, she flinched away as if his touch burned. On the front porch, the paper boy had deposited a newspaper. Local family lays daughter to rest. He still has it locked in the bottom drawer of his desk. As one of only two Orientals at Middlewood High, the other being her brother Nathan, Lee stood out in the halls. However, few seemed to have known her well. Every day since then, there have been more articles. Any death is a sensation in a small town, but the death of a young girl is a journalistic gold mine. Police still searching for clues in girl's death. Suicide, likely possibility, investigators say. Each time he sees one, he folds the newsprint over itself, as if wrapping up something rotten, before Marilyn or the children spot it. Only in the safety of his office does he unroll the paper to read it carefully. Then he adds it to the growing stack in the locked drawer. Now he bows his head. I don't think that's what happened. Marilyn bristles. What are you suggesting? Before James can answer, the doorbell rings. It is the police. And as the two officers step into the kitchen, Nath and Hannah simultaneously let out their breaths. At last their parents will stop arguing.
We just wanted to give you folks an update, says the older one, Officer Fisk, Nath remembers.
He pulls a notebook from his pocket and nudges his glasses up with a stubby finger.
Everyone at the station is truly sorry for your loss. We just want to find out what happened.
Of course, officer,
James murmurs.
We've spoken to the people you listed, Officer Fisk consults his notebook. Karen Adler, Pam Saunders, Shelley Brierly, they all said they barely knew her.
Hannah watches redness spread across her father's face, like a rash.
We've talked to a number of Lydia's classmates and teachers as well. From what we can tell, she didn't have many friends.
Officer Fisk looks up.
Would you say Lydia was a lonely girl?
Lonely? James glances at his wife. Then, for the first time that morning, at his son.
As one of only two Orientals at Middlewood High, the other being her brother Nathan, Lee stood out in the halls. He knows that feeling. All those faces, fish-pale and silent and staring. He had tried to tell himself that Lydia was different, that all those friends made her just one of the crowd.
Lonely, he says again, slowly. She did spend a lot of time alone.
She was so busy, Marilyn interrupts. She worked very hard in her classes, a lot of homework to do, a lot of studying.
She looks earnestly from one policeman to the other, as if afraid they won't believe her.
She was very smart.
Did she seem sad at all these past few weeks? The younger officer asks. Did she ever give any sign she might want to hurt herself, or...
Marilyn doesn't even wait for him to finish. Lydia was very happy. She loved school. She could have done anything. She'd never go out in that boat by herself.
Her hands start to shake, and she clutches the teacup again, trying to keep them steady. So tightly, Hannah thinks she might squeeze it to pieces.
Why aren't you looking for whoever took her out there?
There's no evidence of anyone else in the boat with her, says Officer Fisk. We're on the dock.
How can you tell? Marilyn insists. My Lydia would never have gone out in a boat alone.
Tea sloshes onto the counter.
You just never know these days who's waiting around the corner for you.
Marilyn, James says.
Read the paper. There are psychos everywhere these days. Kidnapping people, shooting them, raping them.
What does it take for the police to start tracking them down?
Marilyn, James says again, louder this time.
We're looking into all possibilities, Officer Fisk says gently.
We know you are, says James. You're doing all you can. Thank you.
He glances at Marilyn. We can't ask for more than that. Marilyn opens her mouth again, then closes it without a word. The policemen glance at each other. Then the younger one says,
We'd like to ask Nathan a few more questions, if that's okay. Alone?
Five faces swiveled toward Nath, and his cheeks go hot.
Me?
Just a couple of follow-ups, says Officer Fisk.
He puts his hand on Nath's shoulder.
Maybe we can just step out onto the front porch.
When Officer Fisk has shut the front door behind them, Nath props himself against the railing. Under his palms, a few shreds of paint work loose and flutter to the porch floor. He has been wrestling with the idea of calling the police himself, of telling them about Jack, and how he must be responsible. In another town or another time, they might have shared Nath's suspicions already. Or if Lydia herself had been different, a Shelley Brierly, a Pam Saunders, a Karen Adler, a normal teenage girl, a girl they understood. The police might have looked at Jack more closely, pieced together a history of small complaints, teachers protesting graffitied desks and insolent remarks, other brothers taking umbrage at his liberties with their sisters. They might have listened to Nath's complaints, after school all spring every day, and come to similar conclusions. A girl and a boy. So much time together alone.
It would not be so hard to understand, after all, why Nath eyed Jack so closely and bitterly. They, like Nath, might have found suspicious signs in everything Jack has ever said or done. But they won't. It complicates the story, and the story, as it emerges from the teachers and the kids at school, is so obvious. Lydia's quietness, her lack of friends, her recent sinking grades, and, in truth, the strangeness of her family. A family with no friends. A family of misfits. All this shines so brightly that in the eyes of the police, Jack falls into shadow. A girl like that and a boy like him, who can have, does have, any girl he wants. It is impossible for them to imagine what Nath knows to be true, let alone what he himself imagines. To his men, Officer Fisk often says, "When you hear hoofbeats, think horses, not zebras." Nath, they would have said, is only hysterical, hearing zebras everywhere. Now, face to face with the police, Nath can see that there is no point in mentioning Jack at all. They have already decided who is to blame. Officer Fisk settles himself against the railing, too. "We just wanted to chat a little, Nathan, in private. Maybe you'll think of something you forgot. Sometimes brothers and sisters know things about each other their parents don't, you know?" Nath tries to agree, but nothing comes out. He nods. Today, he suddenly remembers, should have been his graduation. "Was Lydia in the habit of sneaking out alone?" Officer Fisk asks. "There's no need to worry. You're not in trouble. Just tell us what you know." He keeps saying "just," as if it's a tiny favor he wants, a little offhand thing. "Talk to us. Tell us her secrets. Tell us everything." Nath starts to tremble. He's positive the policeman can see him shaking. "Had she ever snuck out by herself before at night?" the younger policeman asks. Nath swallows, tries to hold himself still. "No," he croaks. "No, never." The policemen glance at each other. Then the younger one perches on the railing beside Nath, like a kid leaning against a locker before school, as if they're friends. This is his role, Nath realizes, to act like the buddy, to coax him to talk. His shoes are polished so bright they reflect the sun, a blurry smudge of light at each big toe. "Did Lydia usually get along with your parents?" The policeman shifts his weight, and the railing creaks. "Maybe you should join some clubs too, honey. Meet some new people. Would you like to take a summer class? That could be fun." "Our parents?" Nath says. He hardly recognizes the voice that comes out as his. "Sure, she did. Did you ever see either of them hit her?" "Hit her?" Lydia, so fussed over, so carefully tended, like a prize flower. The one perpetually on their mother's mind, even when she was reading, dog-earing pages of articles Lydia might like. The one their father kissed first every night when he came home. "My parents would never hit Lydia. They loved her." "Did she ever talk about hurting herself?" The porch railing starts to blur. All he can do is shake his head hard. "No, no, no." "Did she seem upset the night before she disappeared?" Nath tries to think. He had wanted to tell her about college. The lush green leaves against the deep red brick. How much fun it was going to be. How for the first time in his life, he'd stood up straight. How from that new angle, the world had looked bigger, wider, brighter. except she had been silent all dinner, and afterward she'd gone right up to her room. He had thought she was tired. He had thought, I'll tell her tomorrow. And suddenly, to his horror, he begins to cry. Wet, messy tears that dribble down his nose and into the collar of his shirt. Both policemen turn away then, and Officer Fisk closes his notebook and fishes in his pocket for a handkerchief.
Keep it, he says, holding it out to Nath,
and he squeezes him on the shoulder once, hard, and then they're gone. Inside, Marilyn says to James, So I have to ask your permission now to speak in company?
That's not what I meant.
James props his elbows on the table and rests his forehead on his hands.
You just can't go making wild accusations. You can't go berating the police.
Who's berating? I'm just asking questions. Marilyn drops her teacup into the sink and turns on the water. An angry soap froth rises in the drain. Looking into all possibilities, he didn't even listen when I said it could be a stranger.
Because you're acting hysterical. You hear one news report and you get all these ideas in your head. Let it go.
James still hasn't lifted his head from his hands.
Marilyn, just let it go.
In the brief silence that follows, Hannah slips under the table and huddles there, hugging her knees to her chest. The tablecloth casts a half-moon shadow on the linoleum. As long as she stays inside it, she thinks, curling her toes in closer, her parents will forget she's there. She has never heard her parents fight before. Sometimes they bicker over who forgot to screw the cap back onto the toothpaste, or who left the kitchen light on all night. But afterward, her mother squeezes her father's hand, or her father kisses her mother's cheek, and all is well again. This time, everything is different. So I'm just a hysterical housewife? Marilyn's voice is cool and sharp now, like the edge of a steel blade, and under the table Hannah holds her breath. Well, someone is responsible. If I have to find out what happened to her myself, I will. She scrubs at the counter with the dish towel and tosses it down. I would think you would want to know, too. But listen to you. Of course, officer. Thank you, officer. We can't ask for more, officer. The foam chokes its way down the drain. I know how to think for myself, you know. Unlike some people, I don't just kowtow to the police. In the blur of her fury, Marilyn doesn't think twice about what she's said. To James, though, the word rifles from his wife's mouth and lodges deep in his chest. From those two syllables, kowtow, explode bent-backed coolies in cone hats, pig-tailed Chinamen with sandwiched palms, squinty and servile, bowing and belittled. He has long suspected that everyone sees him this way. Stanley Hewitt, the policeman, the checkout girl at the grocery store. But he had not thought that everyone included Marilyn. He drops his crumpled napkin at the empty place and pushes his chair from the table with a screech. I have class at 10, he says. Below the hem of the tablecloth, Hannah watches her father's stocking feet. A tiny hole just forming at one heel, retreat toward the garage stairs. There is a pause as he slips on his shoes, and a moment later the garage door rumbles open. Then, as the car starts, Marilyn snatches the teacup from the sink and hurls it to the floor. Shards of china skitter across the linoleum. Hannah stays absolutely still as her mother runs upstairs and slams her bedroom door, as her father's car backs out of the driveway with a mechanical little whine and growls away.
Only when everything is completely quiet does she dare to crawl out from under the tablecloth to pick the fragments of porcelain from the puddle of soapy water. The front door creaked.